I think I'll start with the obvious question. Who was Chamberlain?
Chamberlain was a character.
That nobody will deny that.
He was born Morton Robert Lichtenfeld in Los Angeles. He has quite an interesting backstory, which I won't go into right now. But his family changed their name, as many Jewish families did, to an Americanized name of Lane. Many when Chamba was very young, and then so he was Morton Lane when he was a young boy, and then he didn't like Morton, so he went to Robert or Bob. Then when he was in Nepal, the Lama that he was studying with gave him the name Chamba, which meant love. So he became Chamba Lane ever after. And I think that was probably in the late 60s, early 70s, as I recall.
And he said that the Lama told him he could spell it however he wanted. And at first he spelled it T-J-A-M-P-A, but then changed it to Chamba.
Right.
Which I guess is, I've heard of a number of other people named Chamba, and they must all have a similar story.
There was a while around here where I knew three Chompas or Jambas, or yeah, so I guess it's the same idea.
Now, that was just one of the many stories in this book, and the book is basically a whole bunch of snippets from probably 45, 50 years of his life, especially a little bit about his youth, but especially about between the time he was about 19 or 20 when he entered the Air Force, and his late 40s, early 50s, when he seemed to be traveling almost constantly.
Yes, he after he left Los Angeles, after he was in the Air Force, and he left Los Angeles, and he began hitchhiking across Europe. He was a good mechanic, so he would do little jobs, working on cars from place to place, and get small jobs, and he'd move on. And he was just a real curious, he was just very curious about the way people lived. He was had the ability to go native, so he could live on a very basic level, and that allowed him a lot of flexibility and freedom as far as traveling. Plus, he was resourceful, and he was frugal. So those two qualities also came in handy in traveling without any great resource behind him. And he went from Europe, then he went down to the Middle East, Israel, North Africa, Iran, spent a lot of time in Afghanistan, went through Pakistan. He didn't like Pakistan, but he did like Afghanistan a lot. He's got some great stories about Afghanistan. And then he spent a year and a half in India studying yoga, and then he went to Nepal. He spent some time, I think, in Burma. He eventually went to Australia, where he spent quite a bit of time. And then he went to, I think he came back to California a couple times, but then he would go back on his travels. And then he finally ended up in Hawaii. And he was there for 10 years, and he had a farm called Eagle Spirit Farm, which was his farm. And it was a commune. He had many people there. He was sort of the head honcho there. And it was quite a nice tribute to him that was sent while he was dying from a woman in Hawaii, who said that he was quite well respected and loved there in Hawaii, which was interesting to hear because he was a irascible character. I mean, he had a little bit of a temper and he was thin skinned, so he could be difficult. But he was also very kind and loving on another level, and so he had all these different traits, and he was quite a character, as mentioned.
And the important thing is that he's a very good writer, and he gets across a sense of the place where he is in just a few words, and there's nothing at all confusing about what he has to say. It's all quite straightforward. And sometimes he doesn't react the way I would have reacted in that place, but I'm glad that he gets across as well as he does exactly how he did react.
Yeah, I mean, it's been shocking to many people to know that this character Chamba Lane, who had the radio program Rabble Rousing on KBMR and was at all the parties looking for his true love, could actually write. He used to tell these stories at parties, actually. But again, people would hear the stories, they'd be interested, and after a while, you know, they'd want to go back to partying, but just nobody really got it. He was writing these down and doing it quite competently. So that's sort of the background of the thing. He wanted to tell his stories. And just a little backup, what we found since he passed was that he was an obsessive note keeper. So he kept notes through all his life, little tiny chicken scratch notes on little pieces of paper everywhere. So these stories, I'm sure, were based on these notes that he kept obsessively through the years during his travels. And then he wanted to share with the world what he'd experienced. And he does have a lot of insights through his travels. He wanted to share these. So not only would he tell these stories at parties, but he also wanted to publish them. And that's where I came in.
So was it when he knew he was dying that he pulled them together?
No. Okay, Chamba actually had two books he had in mind. He actually could, to answer the question you asked before we started, was why does it just go up to the time he came to Nevada County and it doesn't include Nevada County? Because that's another book. There's plenty of other stories that he has recorded, but we had to like kind of cut it off. And also, this is the book he was working on. Okay.
So he was actually working on it as a book. It wasn't just a collection of tales.
Right. Well, it is a collection of tales, each of which pretty much stands on its own, but it's also a collection that kind of ties together and is reflective of this journey he took. So he had two books in mind. He used to take people down to Peru. In fact, I went to Peru with him in 2003 with five other people, including Daniel Gemario, the astrologer, and a few other people. And it was an incredible trip, fabulous trip. And he had done this a number of times. And he had what he called, he had a website called Ancient Energies. So he felt that he had identified a few locations, geographic locations, in the Peru-Bolivia highlands in the Andes, where you could feel the vibe. And I can tell you that I felt the vibe in a few of these places. So he had something there. So he wanted to write a tour guide about ancient energy locations. That was one of his books. And then the other book was the stories. So when he and I got to know each other, then he'd bring this topic up and ask me about how do you publish this stuff. And so I'd kind of go through the numbers with him about how you get this done and what your possibilities were. And so we talked about both books. And I actually think I had a secretary for many years because I used to be a lawyer. And she actually edited the book in an early phase years ago. But then that was interrupted and he went on. And then he had a few other people look at it. Like I think Don Fisher looked at it. And I think somebody else did. He was determined to get this book written. He felt like this was the book that, you know, he wanted to get out there. And the ancient energy, he wasn't going back to Peru anymore. He had his place in Costa Rica now. So he was focused on these stories. And his last time in Costa Rica, where he had been going for months at a time over the last, like, 6-7 years, his aim during this last time in Costa Rica, which was 2010, was to finish these stories. So he was down there working on them. And in fact, his hard drive crashed. And he was despondent because he had to find somebody to recover it. And fortunately, they did recover it. But then he started feeling sick. He had a lot of pain in his back. And that's when he came home. So he had had the stories. He had been working on them. They had a little bit of editing. And that's the state they were in when he was basically on his deathbed as soon as he got back. And that's when I got them, and he asked me if I'd publish them for him, and I said I would. And he gave me some money to do that with. So that was important, because I got to tell you.
Well, I know that probably about 15 years ago, a friend of mine who I think was a former lover of his stayed for a short time on his land, and I helped her move in. We were talking about him because I'd known him for 5 or 6 years then. And she mentioned that one of the things she had really attracted her to him when they were both younger was that he wrote really good stories. And I always assumed that she meant fictional stories. maybe she meant this kind of story, or maybe he's been writing all sorts of stuff all his life.
According to Sherry, there are other writings. I haven't seen them yet. But he did write other things. I think there are stories that she has, because she took over his house and all of his stuff. So she ended up with all of his pictures and his stories, his writings, his little notes, you know. And so I would just add one thing about the writing. I had it edited by a woman named Kathy Levitt, who's a really good editor. When she talked to me or she emailed me, she says, "Carl, this is really good." And then I knew that, you know, it was really good. So we plunged ahead, and sure enough, it's really good. And it's, you know, I don't have a lot of firepower to get this thing out in the market. Promotion is expensive, and it's a whole game in itself that I don't play very well. But it's a really good book, and people are having a great response to it, so...
Now, you yourself, you've been publishing for maybe 10 or 15 years?
I've been publishing, yeah, since about 95. My first book was in 91, but when I retired from law in 95, and I started publishing in earnest, and I published for my small market, my niche, which is photo history. So reference books and other books related to the history of photography. I did some California history, local California histories. And within that niche, you know, I can do maybe 1,000 copies or 2,000 copies and sell enough to break even or maybe make a little money. I know that market. I know that game. But as far as getting the books out, well, you know, Eric, how difficult it is to get books out into the real world bookstores and stuff, which, of course, are falling one by one. But it's tough. It's a crowded market, or mature market, I think, as they say.
Yeah, and that, I wondered about that, that there are some amazingly good photographs in this book, but it is 95% text. So did you move into this market mostly because Chamba was a friend of yours and because the editor said, "Boy, this is a really good book"?
Well, yeah, Chamba was a good friend of mine, and he really wanted to publish this book. I was also a lawyer, so he wanted me to handle his estate, just get it dispersed. He had no children. He had no wife. He had a brother that he wasn't close to. And he wanted somebody to take care of this for him. And, of course, he was very tight, too, so he knew I'd do it for free. But he did leave me some money, so I'm not totally unpaid. But and he wanted, this was his last wish, and I just wanted to honor him. And I've actually got to know him a lot better by reading his stories. I mean, the guy's a very impressive person, and he was, you know, he's an old guy when I met him, basically, and he I just saw him as kind of an eccentric character, but he was great. I also knew that he was a very experienced traveler, and I'm not. You know, I like to have somebody around that knows what they're doing. So I hooked up with him to travel. So we wanted to go to Mexico back in 2000, and so he was the guy we went with. And then later I went to Peru with him, and Bolivia, and then we went to Costa Rica and ended up buying property near his property. So we traveled a lot together, and we hung out a lot together. Later, we liked sports. So we talked sports, and our politics weren't exactly the same. Of course, we liked to talk about women. He loved women, so do I. So we talked about women. So we talked about a lot of stuff. So we became really good friends, and I just wanted to honor him and get his book out there. And then when I found out it was a good book, then all the more.
He's not only a good writer who puts things forward very clearly and distinctly, he is also not the least bit shy about tooting his own horn. So you get a real sense of his accomplishments. He does talk about his hesitations and a few failures, but it's mostly as steps along the way to making him who he is. Although I had the feeling that he was who he was when he was about 5.
That sounds about right. Talking to his brother, yeah, I think he was kind of a tough guy to follow in the family. He's very assertive. He's very bright and very opinionated. And I think he softened a lot over the years, actually. He was really into... communication modality, nonviolent communication. He was very much into that. And he really wanted to talk to people. He wanted to get underneath the surface and do the feminine thing and share the feelings and so forth. And even though he was thin-skinned and he could get his feelings hurt and he could be short-tempered and irascible, he really wanted to connect deeply with people. That was his main thing. And so he'd go to these parties, and of course he wanted to hook up with a woman, but as Daniel Giamari would tell you, that's because he's got Mars in Scorpio, and whatever that is, but that was, he was driven to connect to women. But as much for the conversation, we're getting deeply connected to them in the conversational way as anything. And he really, really wanted to touch people and be touched by them.
We're talking in July of 2012. The book was published 2 months ago, I think.
We had the book release event. It was actually a party, a great party, actually, at the Stonehouse in Nevada City. And so that was May 24th, which was 1 year after Ciampa's passing.
And you said it was a great party, and I guess the book's been quite well received.
Book has been quite well received, and I got a flurry. I've gotten a flurry of email messages, many of which I've quoted in the little flyer I have, and then many oral messages too about how much people are enjoying it. And kind of one of the beauties of the book is it's 63 chapters, and there's a lot of short ones, and they're all pretty self-contained. So even though there's a narrative through line, each unit can be appreciated by itself, so you can come and go and bounce around in the thing. It's a great vacation book. And that's the feedback I've been getting from people. And it's been really nice to have people just come out of the blue and say, I want that book. I sell them out of my car, basically. I mean, they go to a party and somebody, I'd like to get that book. And I sell it to them right there.
And you said that Sherry has other papers. And in addition to all the little notes on scraps of paper, there's probably completed manuscripts. And you said that he was planning to write a book about Nevada County. Is there enough material for that?
I didn't exactly say that. Apparently there's a lot more writing. I don't know much about it. I haven't really talked to Sherry in depth about it. I need to do that at some point. This thing was so all-consuming. It really took a lot of time and energy. But she's the one that came up with the photographs, which I used for the slideshow about his life. Well, most of them, and then the rest I got from my own sources, because I went from Costa Rica, from Peru, the softball league. He loved softball. The softball people loved him, and they brought over a bunch of nice photographs. So, but as far as the other writing goes, I don't know what is in there, but whatever writing he did post-Hawaii would have been in there somewhere. And again, I haven't gotten into detail with her about what's there or not, but probably, you know, we'll never publish that. So there's just not the same motivation as we have for this particular book.
If you had to sum him up, how would you describe Ciampa Lane?
Well,
he's reaching for the book.
He also loved Burning Man. And when the first Burning Man, which was last, September, August, after he died, I went there with his ashes, and I made a little, or some of his ashes, and I made a little altar for him at the temple where people put remembrances or create little memory things for the people that have left their lives and just tributes to people. And then they burned that the night after they burned the Burning Man itself. And I personally think the temple ceremony is more powerful and more significant. At least it is for me. It's quite an amazing place, an event. So I did that. And so I'm riding around my bike out in the playa. And really all I was there for was Ciampa and to read his manuscript, which I did. And I started thinking about him. And this metaphor came to me. And it was, Ciampa was like sweet and sour sauce. And it might sound like a funny metaphor, but people that know him can relate to it because he was very sweet and he could be very sour. And that's kind of the metaphor I would use for him. But in reading his book, you get to see that like many of us who were born in the 40s during the war, just after the war, that we became seekers. You know, there was the whole hippie thing in the 60s and the counterculture, and we, a lot of us, dove into that in various levels. And certainly he did. And but it was about, you know, trying to figure out what's going on here. Who am I? Why are things the way they are? Where am I going? So on and so forth. All the big questions that one might have as a human being. And this is what he was doing for most of his life. And then he finally settled here in Nevada County. And as this one person in Hawaii mentioned in when he was dying, he said there was more aloha spirit in Nevada County than there was in Hawaii. And so he appreciated being here. He wanted to be here. And I would just conclude by saying that when he came home from Costa Rica sick, he only lasted about 4 weeks. He went very fast. He knew he was going to go. I was there the moment he realized that he was going to die. There was no going back. He was on his way out. And he was ready. In fact, he said to me, he said, "Carl," he said, "you know, the different steps you go through when death is approaching, there's either I'm in denial, or due to my Buddhist practice, I'm in acceptance." Basically, he was in acceptance because it was coming and coming fast, and he was ready. And he let go of everything. He let go of the whole idea of getting a girlfriend and the stuff and Costa Rica and the house and this and that. He just didn't. It wasn't important anymore, and he was ready to go. And a lot of people gathered around him and gave him the kind of love that, underneath all that irascibility, he was like giving them. So it was a fitting passing for a very, very eccentric and interesting fellow.